Good point. I do, don't I? But, Tristan said, Lei's going to need that girl's mind to deal with this Rion problem. Cherry's a tactical genius. She spent her entire life playing Go to amuse her father and his friends. And I invited her to play Go tonight. Beothian looked proud of himself. So what say the two of us make sure we have something very important to talk about while the girls get to know each other? Like Rhea, Tristan asked. Or that I've been told there's a caravan of gladiators moving northward. Mail courier from Valview saw them, or so he says. Not sure if that's Marino or Tor, but if he remembers right, we should see them soon. Beothian paused. Thought Marino got arrested. Yeah, but he spilled his guts and gone off with a fine and a warning. The idiot honestly didn't know anything, and while he's an idiot, he hadn't broken any rules. Ilario just needed to take his frustration out on someone. Beothian nodded. Makes sense. So who else is coming to invade my fancy new fortress? Tristan chuckled. I expect Everton to be here any time now, but that's the only one I'm sure of. After pausing for another drink, he added, So do we have a count on the teams that have already arrived? 17 teams, at least 20 in each. I asked the arena owner to get me a count by the end of the week, but he thinks there's at least 500 men lodging under the sands. I also was introduced to the colonel of the Northern Norheim military contingent, a guy named Nikos. Can't remember his last name for the life of me. He said he can start some easy skits to teach the men how to work together and still entertain a crowd. Tristan was nodding. Which will still bring in money. Maybe you can have this Nikos meet with us as well. Beothian shook his head. No, he and his men are in the barracks for the night. Lord Rockdale said he'll speak with Layli tomorrow. The colonel, I mean, not the lord. Sounds like there might be a few options with the northern tribes if we need an alliance. Very nice.
Tristan passed his mug across the table for a refill.
And Layli still has an ace up her sleeve. I can't tell you about it, but I should warn that her sister is supposed to be bringing it with Tor's group.
Beothian leaned back to retrieve the pitcher.
So, did you want to have one of the guard interrupt us tonight? Something we might have to head down into the cellar for a few hours to deal with so we can leave the girls alone? No, make it one of your men and some dispute between staff or something, Tristan decided. And I assume the cellar is where there's more of this. Lanmont ale,
Beothian said, lifting the now full mug.
Yes, that's where another 20 casks of it are waiting to be enjoyed. I think you deserve a little time off work, Lion. Won't even complain if that wolf of yours joins us. I actually miss getting to have an unguarded conversation with her. Me too, Tristan agreed. Feels like every spare second since her coronation has been packed just a little too full. I honestly miss being able to just talk to her, but I guess that's how these things go. What, being the queen? No, Tristan chuckled. Being married. Between the baby, her heir, the war, and everything else, I'm the one thing she doesn't have to worry about. At least that's what I want to be.
Beothian pulled his feet to the floor and leaned forward.
Your girl is one of mine, too, you know. In other words, if you two ever need a little peace and quiet, I'll be happy to go along with whatever trumped-up reason she needs to come up and spend a few weeks out of the public's eye. And I'll promise you, not a single one of my gladiators will betray their queen. Because she didn't betray us, Tristan agreed. Yeah, I think we'll have to take you up on that.
Chapter 31 That night, the Dom of Everton arrived. Thankfully, it was after Theodian's planned meeting between Cherry and Storm. Quite a few hours after, so most of Lanmont was asleep. Unfortunately, the Dom made enough racket to wake the entire citadel, and he'd brought along the Boyer of Senlian and the Boyerette of Holbeck. The only major lord still missing was Moylock, but Connell assured the rest that he could answer any questions about his father's military strength, which was basically nothing outside their navy. So on the fifth day in Lanmont, nearly 2 weeks after the queen had left Oberheim, the full court of Norheim nobility gathered in Theodian's small gallery to discuss the preparations for war, and it was a complete mess. For the first hour, the men argued about nothing more important than the order of seating. After Layli lost her temper, they started up with questions about the cost of feeding so many soldiers. When Theodian tried to offer advice, they dismissed his comments as being unreasonable, since he'd never managed a nobleman's guard before. The moment the former team owner tried to make a polite counter, they spoke over him. "Enough!" Laylee bellowed, shooting to her feet. "The next person who refuses an idea based on who gives it will be stripped of his title, and I'll give it to another gladiator. Do I make myself clear?" From the far end, Lord Abingdon scoffed.
"Empty threats don't scare us, Your Majesty."
Laylee placed both palms on the massive table and leaned over them. "Try me. I dare you. I have dozens of Rians out there who want to turn Norheim into a pretty little trinket to show off in Riadasu. I will not allow anyone in this room to help them. I will consider it treasonous. If you want to discuss the merits, then by all means. But if your only problem is who made the suggestion, get over it, and fast." Then she looked to Theodian, who, as the host, held the seat at the foot of the table. "Now, what were you saying, Dom Lanmont?"
"Grains. The harvest is in, which means every barn and silo in my province should be filled. Supplement with minimal fruits and some dried beans, and we could march the entire country to their capital and have food left over. It's how we fed our teams for months on end."
She chuckled, remembering the meals she'd had in the training camps. "So you think we should feed the army porridge and eggs? What about morale?" He gave her a smug smile.
"I think when my gladiators eat it with gusto, the regular military's pride will keep them from whining too much. Between us and Lord Rockdale, we can check for other rations and slowly wean them off what they're used to until they don't realize a change."
She looked at the men seated along the sides until she found the one in question. "Lord Rockdale, do you agree?" He nodded.
"I do, actually. Dom Lanmont has already impressed me in the short time he's been here. I'll also add that my neighbors to the north will gladly sell us goats for almost nothing."
"Goats?" Lord Holbeck asked.
"What are we supposed to do with goats?"
"Eat them,"
Lord Rockdale said, as if the man were a fool.
"With a few apples and some onions, the men will never know it isn't mutton."
Laylee dipped her head in acknowledgement. "Start the negotiations. I'd rather have more food than we need and a lighter treasury than be scrambling to feed people in the middle of combat. Now, about the units. Who has the count of gladiators and official military?" Theodian shuffled through the paperwork before him.
"I have 527 men housed in the Lanmont Arena. They're sleeping two to a cell at least. Larger cells have up to 4.
Lord Lanlochlian flicked his fingers up to get her attention.
"Your Majesty, if you approve, I have Colonel Mavrosh from the Northern Cohort waiting in the hall."
She gestured to the door. "Bring him in. I need to see how many men he can get us." Then she glanced down to Connell. "Can you work with this?"
"Easily," her husband agreed. "But depending on what Rhea's moving forward, we may need to decide where to concentrate our defenses."
"Tristan," she asked, turning to the statue standing guard behind her. He crossed his arms over his chest.
"Not leaving."
Strangely enough, that made her smile. "Would you poke your head out and ask the closest gladiator to find out who's been across the border and have them brought in?"
"Sure, pup."
His eyes flicked to the lords in the room, daring them to say a word. None did, but at the side, Dario chuckled. When the door opened to let Tristan send a guard off to fetch more information, the colonel walked in. He wasn't at all what she'd expected. The man looked much too young to have the experience for his position, and too beautiful to be bothered by such a hard trade. He wasn't simply handsome, but was complete male perfection, all encased in black leather armor. When her eyes made it to his face, he smiled and then bowed deeply.
"Your Majesty, I must say this is an honor I've waited my whole life for."
"Colonel Mavrosh," she began, but he immediately offered the information she really wanted.
"I have 3 full divisions, and I've already sent a request to the east for more. There should be a few hundred in Lanlochlian. If we include foot and cavalry, I can bring 500 men to the border in the next 2 days, but I can't say what else we may be able to pull in."
"And how many veterans?" she asked. He shook his head.
"Almost none. Plenty have served long terms. Unfortunately, except for skirmishes, there hasn't been much action in the north for years. Our seasoned soldiers are going to be down by Emelad."
"Shit," she breathed. but the colonel's smile proved he heard.
I believe we can work with the gladiators, Your Majesty. I've explained to the man that if their tactics are good enough to save our royal father and queen, then they're good enough to save Norheim. I think pairing one of my units with an equal number of conscripted fighters might be enough to defend the border.
She nodded. Then let's get some ideas for how many we'd need and where. I want to see proposals on that tomorrow.
Yes, Your Majesty.
He stepped back, but she gestured for him to stay in the room. Behind her, she heard Tristan grumble softly, proving he'd also noticed just how attractive that man was. Not that it mattered. Even handsome men could lead well. She knew because her Sekor had already proven it. But that didn't mean she wasn't flattered to know Tristan was a little jealous. She'd just have to make it up to him later. Okay, she said, looking over to Connell. What else do you need?
Weapons, he said, tapping his notes. If we empty out the arenas, that should be enough, but I'd like to—
The opening of the door cut him off. Laylee turned, expecting to see the gladiators who'd been sneaking across the border for a closer look. What she saw instead made all of her fears vanish. Wearing brown wool trews and a green tunic that was at least one size too large and covered in road dust, Essa stepped in. Behind her was a very tall, very dark man, the one Laylee had been hoping against hope would come help them. Dario immediately stood straighter. I'm sorry it took so long, Essa said as she peeled the wooden necklace from her neck. We hit rain halfway here and kept getting the cart stuck. Then she thrust out the crude pendant. But I kept it safe. Thank you, Laylee sighed, meaning both the necklace and everything else her sister had done. One hand closed on the pendant, and her opposite arm hugged Essa's neck. How many men? Behind her, Death chuckled.
117 of my own, plus 3 other teams for a total of 312.
Colonel Mavrosh chuckled, unable to smother it completely. A few of the lords noticed and glanced his way.
Your Majesty, the colonel asked, how about we make that 2 gladiators to each of my soldiers?
Sure,
Death replied,
so long as you give me 2 days to train them.
2!
That was the Dom of Everton.
Your Majesty, this entire ordeal has made a mockery of proper procedure already. Now you have some gladiator walking in here, able to see our plans as clear as day.
He waved at the maps spread across the table.
And you don't reprimand him for speaking out of turn?
Dom Everton's eyes moved to Death.
And a Rion slave at that.
Death smiled.
You have no idea.
Hey, Dario snapped, chiding the lord. In case you forgot, my sister and Lord Oberheim were both slaves only a few months ago. Those same slaves are the ones offering their lives to defend Norheim, and most of them have skills we desperately need. Show some respect.
That's when Lord Sanlian pushed to his feet.
Princess Alessia, we appreciate your rush, but I think it's time for you and your friend to clean up and relax so your brother isn't upset. We'll send for you if you're needed.
Excuse me? Laylee snapped, seeing her brother tense at the insult. Did I not make it clear that you were all here at my pleasure? That's when Essa touched her arm and pointed back to the door, making it clear she was leaving. Laylee didn't blame her. Between the long, hard ride, the filth she was covered in, which Essa was not used to, and the attitude in this room, Laylee wanted to escape too. Instead, she just nodded in understanding, giving her sister permission to bolt like any sane person would. Death, however, made no move to follow. His chuckle was the only thing lightening the tension that filled the room.
For a strategy meeting, Wolf.
Yeah, with all of them. Then she turned and offered her hand. I'm so glad you could make it. My offer still stands. Your men are a great help, but some things never leave the arena. Clasping her hand, Death shook his head.
No, Essa told me.
That's Princess Alessia, Rockdale corrected.
You will respect the titles of the nobility in this room, sir.
Death ignored him.
I'd like to make a counteroffer.
Here? Laylee asked. He dipped his head.
I think here is good. I also think you have no choice but to agree. I'll train your military and gladiators to beat back Rhea in 2 days. The tactics are easy enough, and I'll give you full access to every man I brought with me to defend your borders. In exchange, I want the right to court your sister.
Laylee leaned back and smiled. Are we doing this like politicians or gladiators?
Gladiators, of course.
Fine. Then who she gives her attention to is her own decision. I will not sell my family, not even to you. Death leaned closer, making every lord look to Tristan, waiting for something, but the Secor didn't budge.
Okay, then you don't stand in my way, and I'll make you a very good deal once I have something to trade with.
Laylee lifted her hand and spit on it, then held it out. Sure, but I've always felt that putting up your life as collateral was enough. I'm just glad you never had to pay. Death mimicked her gesture, then slapped his saliva-covered palm against hers.
Me too.
Pumping their fists once like commoners, he then released her and turned to the map.
They'll have a cohort back here, waiting in reserve. I'm going to guess that if you can get any scouts across the border, you'll find a few dozen men in camp here, here, and here. Those are for initial strikes, mostly to test your resolve.
He looked back at her over his shoulder.
Laylee, they're taunting you to bite first.
Why?
Treaties,
he explained.
You said the message was from Vinkel, right?
Dom Brettenvale waved both of his hands across his chest, halting the conversation as he stood.
Do not tell this Rian anything else, Your Majesty. He comes in here, treating you as a commoner, thinking he's good enough for a princess, and now you're going to let some Rian deserter see your strategy? My queen, I know this may come as a shock to you since the king sheltered you from the reality outside the palace, but he's probably just hoping for enough information to buy his way out of prison time.
He's not, Laylee said. But Death spoke over her, stepping toward the man.
And which one are you? Dom, Boyer, one of those other strange titles.
I'm the Dom of Brettenvale.
Death smiled.
Pleasure. Right now there are only two things that are going to save Norheim from another war. One is the fact that your queen is one hell of a nasty bitch, and I mean not in the best way. The second,
he chuckled,
is me. Maybe you've heard of me. My name is Claudius Gaius, the next Caesar of Rhea. And lucky for you, I'm on the wolf's side.
Chapter 32.
He can't be the Caesar's heir, someone mumbled.
The sentiment was the same, coming from almost every mouth in the room. Some were louder than others, but the pampered nobility of Norheim couldn't contain their disbelief. Laylee, however, didn't bother to yell over the ruckus. She just let them burn themselves out, knowing that voicing their opinions would only make them look more foolish in the long run. It would also give her an advantage, and she learned the hard way to collect all of those she could. While the others tried hard to make their comments heard, Dario made his way over. He looked completely unimpressed with the chaos of the cabinet meeting, but he had to be there. So far, he'd offered up exactly nothing, except for voicing support for his sister, but he had to have heard what Death had asked for.
So you want to see my sister, huh?
Death smiled.
I would. You must be the new heir. Congratulations, Your Highness.
Dario smiled and shook his head.
It's temporary, and I intend to make sure I'm replaced. I'm glad you decided to come, though.
Realizing that meant Dario knew Laylee had sent for him, Death leaned a little closer and dropped his voice below the ruckus.
So you two are honestly okay with me courting your sister? She could do worse,
Dario told him. Laylee nodded and stretched up to reply in his ear. Yes, that it would bind our countries together is a nice benefit, but mostly because I think you're enough of a man to respect that she can do more than just sew.
Heard she likes sewing.
His eyes flicked to her dress.
And I have to say, I'm not brave enough to grab you to check for weapons.
Which implied that he'd had his hands on Essa in the time they'd been alone. Laylee glanced at her brother, half expected him to be pissed. Instead, he looked amused, as if he'd expected nothing else. Then again, Essa only pretended to be quiet. In truth, she was anything but. If she cared, Laylee told them both, she would have put a blade in you for the insult.
And she told me as much,
Death grinned.
I also know about the cub. Tell the old man congratulations from me.
It was vague enough to be overheard, but Laylee knew which old man he was referring to. She jerked her head back. I think you can do that yourself, but let's get this mess under control. Then she raised her voice. Are you all done now? The Dom of Breton Vale turned his attention on her.
You don't honestly believe this man is the Princep Claudius Gaius, do you?
Laylee gestured for the nobles to take their seats. I do. As some of you know, he came to the palace many years ago and stayed in... She turned to Death. What room was it?
My mother and I were given rooms in the diplomatic wing, sectioned off from the rest of your populace, but it was nice. Your father also gave us access to the Rose Gardens while we were visiting. I may have tried to convince a few of your pretty Norahame servants to walk out there with me, but none would. Your brother told me I was too terrifying for such gently kept women.
And why were you in Oberheim anyway, she asked, continuing to prove her point. He smiled, understanding exactly what she was doing.
Your father invited us up for Prince Kale's birthday. 16th, I think it was, but that was just the excuse. I told my mother I wouldn't marry someone just for a treaty. I wanted to see my potential wife before agreeing to anything.
He gave her an apologetic look.
You were young and ungainly. I was barely a man and wanted nothing more than tits and curves. Sorry, Wolf.
Me too. Think of all the strife we could have prevented.
Will, he corrected. We're not done yet.
She turned to the men. How many people even know that there's a diplomatic wing in the palace reserved for foreign guests? Never mind that there was a betrothal on the table at that time. That was something only the lords of Norahame would have been told. So do you believe him yet?
And who else, Theodian added, would have the funds to support an entire team of gladiators just to hide himself?
He smirked over at Death.
Took me years to figure out how Tor could afford such luxuries in his camps. When I tried to buy your deed from him, he didn't counter with an outrageous price. He'd flat turned me down. That same day, I overheard you telling him about a fight you refused to be in. When he pulled you from it, I realized the money must be in your hands.
The Odian made his way up the length of the table and extended his arm.
Never mind all the rumors. Nice to have you on our side, Death.
I never went against the ones who had a chance to make it off the sands, Death explained,
accepting Theodian's hand.
And you ran a damned good team. Glad the wolf ended up with you.
Aren't we all, Laylee agreed. Okay, my lords, I think I've made it clear that the Princep is and will be welcome in my strategy meetings. This is not up for discussion. Now we have all of our base numbers and a good idea of the allies we can count on. Spend the rest of your evening coming up with a plan for how to find us more soldiers and get them here without showing aggression. Colonel, if you'd wait a moment, the rest of you all can leave. She touched Death's arm and caught Theodian's eyes, letting them know they weren't included in the dismissal. The nobles weren't happy about being shut out, but they weren't foolish enough to complain either. At least this time. While the men made their way out the door, Laylee moved further into the room, heading toward the foot of the table. Tristan, Dario, and Connell followed her, but they didn't say a thing. No, they were here to help, unlike the rest of the lords. Laylee was already tired of the petty complaints, but it wasn't unexpected. Mostly, she just hated how so many of her peers felt that status was more important than the security of Norahame. Okay, she breathed, letting the word fall out. Death, this is Colonel Mavrosh. He's in charge of the official Norahame soldiers in the Northern District. Colonel Mavrosh, the Princep has offered to show our gladiators a few things. I think everyone knows Tristan, my secor, Connell, my husband, and my heir, Dario. There was a moment as the men assured her that, yes, they all knew each other's names. It was Tristan who actually spoke up.
Lay, sit down. I think we can all accept it if the Queen forgets a few manners in her effort to deal with a brewing war.
Yeah. She claimed the chair that had been Theodian's and gestured for the men to join her. Okay, what's next?
If your men are willing, Colonel, Death said, I'll train your soldiers as well as the gladiators, mainly how to repel a Rion shield wall. If they learn fast enough, I'll also show them how to form one.
The colonel's eyes narrowed, and he didn't try to hide his blatant assessment of death.
What does Rhea gain by this, anyway? In all honesty, an escort to Rhea do so to get me into the Senate.
He smiled and crossed his arms over his chest.
I'm hoping I'll end up with a wife, too, but Laylee says she can't help there, although her brother not killing me is a good start. Colonel... Nikos, he interjected.
I notice the rest of you are on friendly terms, so no need to be stuffy on my account.
Dayton,
Death asked, hearing the name. Nikos nodded.
My adoptive parents were. They're gone now, and I moved to Norheim a very long time ago.
He glanced over to Laylee.
I assure you, Your Majesty, that I'm not only loyal but dedicated to see my home stay independent of Rhea. No offense, Princep Gaius.
None taken, Death assured him.
Because I am, too. I've grown fond of this stubborn little nation.
Then he pointed at the map.
But Senator Vinko's men are trying to poke at the wolf. If he can brag that he not only incited Norheim to break the treaty, but has managed to push back your border...
Tristan tapped the dark line that marked the border.
How far? What will he consider good enough?
Oberheim, Laylee grumbled.
Not necessarily, Death assured her. Even just hauling the Dome of Lanmont back might be enough for the Senate to raise him up to Caesar. That's why I need to get back, Laylee. I'll leave my men here under your command, but I need to get back to Rhea do so. It's been almost 40 days since my father died. The mandated time of mourning is over. We only have 3 weeks before the vote for the next leader of Rhea will be cast.
And it's almost 2 weeks to get there,
Dario told them.
One, if you're willing to risk running your horses into the ground.
Which I can't, Death explained. Not only do I not have a string of horses to trade out, but a rider racing into the City of Light. No, I'd be stopped before I made it to the Senate.
Okay, Laylee muttered one more time. So what do you need to get there?
In all honesty, Death sighed. It would probably be safer if I tried to make my way there on my own, but...
No, Laylee said, glancing at Tristan for assurance. Without any guard, if they catch you? For the first time in history, Norheim has a friend in Rhea. She closed her eyes and made her decision. No, I'd rather lose a few good men than risk what we've already started.
Majesty, Nikos asked, have you considered that you'll be invited to the proceedings? Maybe the Princep could pose as one of your many guards. And Grigori's still not completely healed, Connell pointed out.
Dario murmured appreciatively.
And I honestly believe Claudius will protect you.
His eyes moved to land on Death.
I mean, since he's trying to impress our little sister.
Tristan chuckled.
I think you're as bad as me, Dario, but it won't hurt to have one more gladiator standing with Lei.
Death was nodding.
And if your letter reached my mother, well, that might just work out better than we expected.
Why?
Theodian asked.
Because someone has to reassure the senators that I am who I claim, and the mother always knows her son. She is the Caesar's widow, too, which holds sway in politics.
Then all we have to do is figure out how to get there with an army blocking our way, Laylee decided. Theodian, make sure the gladiators know Rhea is trying to taunt us and tell them to not strike back without orders. Connell, would you write up letters to every lord, no matter how minor, with a holding along the border? The entire border, because if one senator had this idea, the chances are good that another will, and... The sound of the door opening made her mouth snap shut. On the other side were three younger gladiators, all waiting to be granted access. Laylee lifted a brow and looked at the guard who'd let them in. His head bobbed nervously, and he pointed to the people waiting.
You requested those who'd crossed the border, Queen Wolf.
Between his lack of a warning knock, the awe on his face, and the title he'd used, this was clearly one of Theodian's reformed gladiators. Laylee smiled to reassure him that he'd done nothing wrong, then invited the other three to come in. They did, but when the last crossed the threshold, Tristan chuckled.
Well, hello, Storm.
Lion, she greeted him. You two know each other? Laylee asked. Tristan smiled.
Mm-hmm. Met her last night when Sherry and I visited with Theodian.
Which Laylee had heard about. She looked the girl over with a new perspective. What did you do to end up in the sandstorm?
A thief, Your Majesty. got caught with 2 loaves of bread. Not that I wanted to steal, mind, but I did want to eat.
Can't say as I blame you. Laylee dipped her head at the other 2 men in acknowledgement. Have any of you seen how many Rians we're looking at?
I counted 100, give or take, the man on the left told her. They had a camp on the backside of the ridge where they wouldn't be seen. 10 rows of 10 tents, and looked to be a few more people than places to sleep. To the north, the guy on the right added, is another group. They were marching toward the one that Boulder saw, if I had to guess. Didn't get a good count, but more than 50.
Laylee lifted a brow at Storm, waiting for what she had. The girl smiled deviously.
Those 2 camps are a day's march out, or so. Another day past them as the rest of the army. I couldn't tell you how many, but lots. Maybe 5 times the size of the camp Boulder saw, and they're running patrols.
Yeah, and practicing troop movements, I'm willing to bet, Death said. That was standard procedure when I was with the Rian military. 2 lookouts to convince the enemy to spread out their defense, and the real army close enough to offer support if we're at that. They'll be using a triangle for their locations, too.
He gestured on the map to make his point. 2 widely spaced camps, and 1 behind, but between them. So, between 700 and 1,000 men, Laylee said, putting it all together. And all of them within 2 days' ride of Landmont. Why here, Death? Why not Rockdale or even Brettonvale down south?
Because Landmont's a fortress that has everything we'd need to resupply a Rian army. This entire province is fertile farmland and populated enough to mean there's food available. The citadel is fed by an underground aquifer. It's also just a bit out of reach from your normal military rounds. And then there's what we Rians knew of the former owners. Lately, I'm afraid the Sarasona family were known to be easy to pay off.
So Vinko expected Landmont to just let him in? Death nodded.
I'm willing to bet that attack your cousin orchestrated in the arena wasn't even his idea. It was probably Vinko's. Give the Dome a few pounds of gold, and he'd be so busy trying to earn more that Landmont would look like a ghost town. Senator Vinko could have ridden right in. They just planned for the chaos of a king's death, not a queen to send up an entire herd of gladiators.
By the gods, Laylee gasped. You mean all of Norheim may have been saved because you agreed to stand beside me that day? Colonel Mavrosh chuckled and shook his head.
I think it's more true to say Norheim was saved because a wolf refused to give up. You had a lot to do with saving the Aravati crown, Your Majesty. This time, you deserve to take a little credit for it.
Chapter 33 The meeting ended with Laylee knowing a lot more about what to expect, but still not having a clue how to defuse the tension. The safest thing would be to just wait for an invitation to Riadasu, which should be coming, but that didn't mean she could afford to sit idle, either. After giving everyone a list of duties she needed to complete before the next meeting, Laylee let Tristan escort her back to her suite. I feel like the gods are toying with us again, she said. Like there's some piece of this that I'm missing. He reached over, gently resting his hand on the middle of her back.
Taking a break for a bit might help. Pop, you're amazing, but you need to rest.
She cast him a warning look. Now, but...
Yes, now. This is no different from the games and has absolutely nothing to do with anything else.
His eyes flicked to her belly, making it clear what he meant.
Remember what I told you about the carts? About the men sitting on those benches, exhausted because they couldn't get any real rest on the way to the arena?
That they'd die because they'd be slower or make a mistake. With a sigh of defeat, she turned to face him. You're right. I know you're right, but it's easier to just keep going. I've been barreling headlong into this, hoping that if I do more, then I can change something. But you taught me better than that. I'll try, okay? He stepped closer and looked down with a smile.
I know you will, Pop. I think you've just been anxious because you didn't know what weapons you had. Now you do. Lay, I'm not telling you to stop. I would never do that because you're an amazing queen. I'm just reminding you that you need to rest, too. Not just sleep, but laugh and dance and do things to break the loop in your head.
She slowly nodded in agreement, all too aware that his point was valid. Wanna invite everyone over for a bit and maybe play some Go?
Sure.
He turned her back toward their rooms.
And we're locking the door, because I want to hear all about what Cherry thinks of Storm.
Yes, Lele agreed, walking a little faster. Did they seem to get along? Tristan shrugged.
Dunno. The Odin and I left as soon as we could, but they were laughing when we got back.
She poked a finger in his arm. You two are adorable matchmakers.
Fuck off.
But he was smiling proudly. When they reached the entrance to her rooms, Connell's other two guards stood like sentries outside, proving her husband was already back. Both dipped their heads respectfully, but that was as friendly as they ever got. Lele decided that today might be a good day to change that. When Tristan reached for the door, she looked at the one closest.
Aldo, would you and Gobin care to come in and sit for a bit? I was thinking about relaxing and figure you can guard me as well from the inside as out here.
Before Aldo could answer, Gobin spoke up.
Thank you, Your Majesty, but we're supposed to stay out here.
Aldo just tipped his head to Gobin.
He's right, Your Majesty. We're on duty.
Tristan released the door without opening it.
I'd be willing to talk to Timoteo about it, he offered.
The two men shared a look, then Aldo said.
Sir, that's not necessary, although we appreciate it.
Lele was starting to think she'd found a whole new set of problems to worry about. Inside, she ordered the pair. You can explain it in there, and I want an honest answer. Gobin shuffled, looking over at his companion. When he got nothing, he next turned his attention down the hall, checking to make sure they were alone so no one would hear his next words.
Queen Arvati, I'd rather tell you out here so no feelings are hurt. The halls are empty, Your Majesty.
She lifted a brow. Okay. Gobin leaned a bit closer and dropped his voice.
When Captain Timoteo hired us, he made his preferences very clear. The two of us don't care. We also don't care about your relationship with your husband either. Our job is to protect and defend anything you choose to do, and we have no problem with it. I swear to that before all the gods.
Then he lowered his voice even more, whispering,
My little brother is queer. But,
Aldo said, checking the halls himself before stepping closer.
Your Majesty, I don't want to see it. We've been trained to keep our opinions to ourselves, but I'm not sure I wouldn't say something rude or make a face. Those are good men, and I don't care so long as my queen doesn't, but that's their home. I mean, and yours. No man should be disrespected in his home.
And you want to keep your job,
Tristan grumbled, aware that also played a part.
We do, sir,
Gobin agreed.
The captain made it very clear that Her Majesty would not tolerate disrespect, so we don't go in. It's just what works for us, and Captain Timoteo said he's okay with that.
She looked back and forth between them, trying to find the resentment on their faces, but there was none.
And you think I shouldn't worry about this?
That the pair of you know things we'd prefer are kept to ourselves and yet are staying distant?
Your Majesty,
Aldo breathed, hearing the threat.
I swear to you, your reign, and anything else, that we're not about to make problems. We just decided that if we kept a more traditional role as guardsmen for the prince consort, then it would be less awkward for everyone involved.
He swallowed nervously.
It was the captain's idea, Your Majesty. I promise we're not anything at all for you to worry about, and we both sworn to give our lives before betraying your trust.
Tristan grunted.
We make everyone swear an oath of loyalty and secrecy, Lay. For them to betray it would be treason.
Okay, she decided, realizing they really had covered everything. But if that changes, talk to Tristan about it before anyone else.
I give you my word,
Gobin assured her. Aldo nodded in agreement. Lele hoped it really would be that easy, but since there was nothing more to be said, she went in. Tristan followed until she stopped short, making him almost bump into her. The friends she'd been planning to invite were already there, even Essa. Her sister's hair was wet, proving she hadn't even been given the chance to properly dress before being dragged to the suite, and everyone clustered around her, tossing out questions faster than she could answer. The only person missing was Dario.
Where's my brother? Lele asked.
Astrid smiled.
Probably changing out of his formal clothes. He promised to spend time with me tonight.
Okay. Laylee paused when she saw the massive grin on Grigori's face. Did I miss something? He flapped an arm at Essa.
She found the heir of Rhea. You sent her to talk to gladiators, and she found the princep.
Tristan laughed. It wasn't a chuckle, and he made no effort to hold it in. He just laughed and shook his head as he guided Laylee the rest of the way in and toward a chair. She didn't make it. Halfway across the room, Essa shot to her feet, her eyes on Laylee's waist.
Gianna, Essa asked, did you bring those other dresses?
Yes, why?
Slowly, a smile grew on Essa's face.
Because my sister is starting to show. What are you at now, Laylee, 12 weeks?
Laylee's hand immediately went to her stomach. Almost. Counting from the end of my courses, it'll be 12 weeks and 2 days.
Ew, Grigori groaned, but he was smiling. I don't want to know about your courses.
Tristan rolled his eyes.
It's how women know when the little one will come.
Yeah, but... Grigori made a face.
Just gross. Counting also lets you know which days to avoid so you don't get a bastard, Tristan told him. Oh.
From the way Grigori said it, Laylee was convinced he'd never heard that before. Considering she hadn't either before meeting Tristan, it wasn't surprising. She just assumed the Secor would have taught all the guys that country trick. Still, the fact that Grigori had no known bastards yet meant he had to be doing something right, and keeping his dick in his pants certainly wasn't it. Essa ignored all of that.
Seriously, Lay, we're going to need to let out your waistline soon. I was thinking we might as well start using your new styles before it's too obvious.
Sure. But her attention was on her hand and the hardness she felt in the pit of her belly. It wasn't much, just a round bulge hidden under her muscles, but she knew it was her child. Somewhere in there was a little Tristan. She still couldn't feel it, but she knew it, and a tiny little smile found her lips.
Lay,
he asked, kneeling before her. Catching his hand, she met his eyes.
It's getting bigger.
Then she pressed his palm over the lump. From the confusion on his face, he couldn't tell any difference, but she could.
I can finally feel something different.
The smile he gave her was wistful.
I can't. Is it moving?
She shook her head.
Not yet. Probably another month.
Then I'll wait another month.
Leaning closer, he kissed the spot where his hand had been.
I hope she looks like you, Lay.
From behind him, the guys chuckled.
Don't we all,
Edwin muttered.
If it's a boy, Connell said, moving to her side. It should look like Kale or Tristan, so handsome king.
Astrid called over.
Or a beautiful queen if she looks like me.
Timoteo shrugged those away.
Regardless, it'll be beautiful, Laylee, and strong. That poor little wolf doesn't have a chance of anything else.
Wouldn't it be nice, Laylee asked, if your kids could grow up and be her guardsmen?
Or women,
Crush said, glancing over to his wife.
Maybe if we have a girl, she can grow up to be the queen's shadow and Joseph can be a scholar.
Mara waved him off.
Your son is already chasing girls, so don't get your hopes up. He's just like his daddy.
That's when Laylee realized the boy wasn't with them.
Where is he, anyway?
Mara jerked a thumb toward the balcony.
Out there with some gladiators trying to smack them with sticks.
Practice blades, Crash corrected. Couple of the guys said they'd keep an eye on him for us.
So you get a night alone? Laylee asked.
From the blush on Mara's cheeks, that was exactly the plan. Crash decided to make it even more clear.
Figured I'd need some of that if I want a daughter, you know?
Boris!
Mara hissed, but everyone in the room was chuckling.
That is not any of their business.
Why not? Their business is all of ours, so it's just fair.
Then the big guy grinned.
Figured when you and Wolf have one of those girly talks, you can let her know what the lion should be doing. Oh,
Tristan groaned, pretending to be wounded.
Trying to show off now, are ya? Fuck ya!
Crush tilted his head to his wife.
Got my girl to impress now.
Laylee leaned back and nodded.
I think all of us do. Speaking of that, Cherry, do we get to hear about Storm?
The shy girl's face immediately flushed, making Mara's look pale by comparison.
I don't...
She looked around, finding nothing but smiling faces.
I didn't think I should mention that.
I'm pretty sure, Connell said, that no one in this group will judge you, and it really is nice to have friends who only want your happiness.
Your family, Laylee told her. All of you. Then she glanced at Connell. The only friends I get, and I want them to be as happy as they make me, so yes, we do want to know.
Cherry took a deep breath and nodded.
She's nice. Then she paused, but the words that came after tumbled over themselves. And pretty, and so strong, and she's really smart, too. She never learned how to talk properly, but she still makes it clear that she's no fool.
Her words trailed off, and her eyes dropped to her hands.
And she kissed me.
Sitting beside her, Grigori reached over and patted Cherry's shoulder.
Just don't play too hard to get, Cher. Even a gladiator can get scared off. And if you need a room, let me know, okay?
What? Laylee asked.
Grigori grinned.
Girls are bunked two to a room. Figure if she needs privacy, I can crash on Horace's floor.
Laylee's mouth was hanging open. Of all the people she'd thought would be understanding, Grigori wasn't one. When Connell and Timoteo's relationship had been discovered, she'd had to threaten him with losing his position. When it came to Cherry, she'd expected some crass comment about wanting to join in, but he'd changed. She was pretty sure it had happened when he'd been wounded. Evidently, he saw the shock on her face.
Laylee, you told me we all have one thing, and you're right. One thing that holds all the rest together, that makes who we are work. I figure being a guardsman means my job is to protect that.
He tried to shrug that away, but the look on his face was almost embarrassed.
You're a good man, Grigori, she told him. A damned good one, who I happen to owe my life.
He smiled and tried to shift the attention off him.
Speaking of lovers, though, I don't have one. Heard someone does, though.
He turned to look at Essa.
So, our own little princess is going to marry a Rion?
Laylee answered before Essa could feel pressured. He only asked for the right to try. That was our deal. I'll help him, he'll help me, and I won't stop him from trying to court you, Essa, but you are not required or expected to marry him.
I know, she promised. I really do, Laylee, but it makes sense. I mean, if I marry him, then Norheim is safe for at least another generation. Our child will be half Norheimer, or children. We'd probably have more than one, and then the next Caesar will have family here.
Do you love him? Tristan asked.
No, Essa said, laughing that off. No, not after a week, but that has nothing to do with this. I've always known I'd marry someone my father picked out. Unlike Laylee, I didn't expect to get a prince or a dom, probably a boyar at best, but I'd still move away from Oberheim. It's how even minor nobles secure the importance of their position. I don't see why marrying the Caesar would be any different.
Her teeth closed on her lower lip.
Maybe even better. Then she looked up at her sister. I like him, Laylee. I understand him. He's nothing at all like I expected from a Rion.
He's a gladiator, she said, making it both a question and explanation all in one. Essa nodded.
Yeah, and I've realized that makes me comfortable. I mean, this is a great idea. It's wonderful for him, for Rhea, and even better for Norheim, so why shouldn't I?
Laylee lifted a hand, delaying Essa's enthusiasm. And there's absolutely no rush. You can think about this, get to know him, and change your mind.
He knows I won't sell off my family. I, however, know the reason Death stayed in Norheim for so long isn't just because it would be hard to hide in Rhea. It's because he wants this war to stop just as bad as we do. You have as much leverage here as he does.
Yeah, but... She paused for a little smile. I honestly like him. I like that he laughs when we spar and not at me. I like that he's interested in the clothes I make. I like that he makes me feel like his equal.
Tristan chuckled.
And I like that I'm not going to need to kick his ass.
Another one of those smiles flickered across Essa's lips, looking like the love-struck kind.
I didn't say that. I mean, protecting my honor and all.
Essa, Laylee gasped, sitting up.
Did you and he?
No, she promised.
No, I'm still a virgin, but it may have gotten close.
Wait.
Grigori spun to face her.
Are we talking, like, naked kind of close, or like the kissing for hours kind?
Somewhere in between? Grigori nodded in approval.
Yep. I think I like this whole women in power thing. But Essa, if he goes too far, you tell me, okay? I'll put his ass on the ground.
Both Crush and Tristan laughed at that, and neither tried to hide it.
No, Crush told him. You wouldn't. No one can beat death. Not me and probably not Tristan. The man might let Dario get a hit in just to save his pride, but that's about all. Lay could, Tristan told them. I think she's the only person who's ever found a weakness on him.
Essa crossed her arms and leaned back in her chair.
I did, too. He didn't expect anyone to kick him in the balls. Seems I don't need my brother around to protect me.
Oh, the whole room groaned in chorus. While Essa went on to tell about her sparring match with Death, Laylee just leaned back and enjoyed it. Tristan was right. She needed this. Needed just a little time to forget that the fate of an entire country was depending on her. These stolen moments with her friends, the people who had become like her family, helped her remember exactly why she did this, and why she worked so hard to be a good queen. The people, her people, and she would not let some rogue senator take them from her.
Chapter 34. She tumbled into the bed that night with Tristan, and for the first time in weeks, their kisses were passionate. He'd been right. She needed to stop trying to make sure nothing bad happened, and just accept that her job was to fix things after it did. This was just like the games, back when they'd had no clue what would kill them in their next fight, who would be holding the weapon, or how disadvantaged they'd be walking onto the sands. And yet, every single time they'd accepted that lack of control as nothing more than the way things were. Life was no different. Entwined with her lover, with her husband in the next room, this was certainly not the future that had been scripted for her, but she'd made it happen. Even better, she'd make sure everything worked out, somehow. That meant she should enjoy this before she ran out of time. One day something would go wrong, and it'd be the one thing she never saw coming. Didn't matter how hard she tried to guess every pitfall they could find themselves in, there would always be one more that would get them. But right now, she had everything. With her back pressed against Tristan's naked chest, she finally felt like she could do this. One of his arms rested on her hip, and his palm pressed that spot in her belly where their child was growing. His breath tickled the back of her neck. Then there was that other part, pressing just above her rump, reminding her of what they'd just done. With a smile on her face, Laylee let sleep take her. And that's how she woke only a few hours later. Someone in the main room was saying to wake the prince, and it wasn't the voice of her guards. Lay had only enough time to pull the covers over her chest before the door burst open, spilling in light from the lantern the man held. But Tristan was waiting. With a growl, he lunged forward, ready to throttle the intruder with his bare hands, not caring at all that he was naked. The intruder stepped back and lifted the lantern, exposing the Lanmont dragon on his chest, even as he said,
"Sorry, lion, but we need the wolf. There's been an incident, and Theodian wanted to make sure it was one of us who woke her. No disrespect to your partner, sir, but there's no time to be civil." "Get out," Tristan growled.
The former gladiator stepped back.
"Dress fast. The prince's guards should be waking him, and there's a messenger from Dalhurst."
He closed the door before Tristan could get close enough to harm him. "Pants," Laylee told him.
"Lay, that man just saw me in your bed."
She rolled off her side and found the dress she'd left on the floor from the night before. "I'm well aware of that, but for Theodian to send someone into our rooms, I think we have bigger problems." Tristan paused with one leg in his pants.
"Where's Dalhurst, anyway?"
"North of here, just a little over halfway to Abandon. It's nothing really, not even a true keep. A few generations back, an unlanded boyarette married into a family with land, and it's been there ever since. No political importance whatsoever." She barely had her underthings on, but he was already pulling on his shirt.
"So why would they have sent a messenger?"
he asked. "Because it's on the border." Making a hasty decision, Laylee grabbed her training clothes and discarded the dress. The tunic and trews might not look impressive, but it had to be after midnight. She was not wasting time styling her hair when her country could be falling apart.
Thankfully, Tristan didn't say a thing, just passed across her sword belt. They stepped into the main room at the same time Connell and Timoteo did, the four of them meeting eyes across the heads of the three Landmont guards who'd interrupted their sleep.
That's a problem, Connell muttered.
Sir, the man assigned to the door tried to explain, but the gladiator was faster.
I'm Hart, partner to Crow.
He tipped his head to Tristan and Laylee, then looked over to Connell.
Yes, that kind of partner. Theodian knows how I found the lion and the captain sleeping just inside your doors, and no one will hear anything else from me. This is Landmont, and we know that stories aren't always fair. I'll take you all to the audience hall.
Laylee, Connell asked as he fell in at her side. It's fine, she assured him, hoping she wasn't wrong. I have a feeling everyone on the Landmont Guard knows Tristan would gut you before letting you touch me. The chuckle from ahead proved that Hart heard.
We also believe that our secrets make us stronger than any other province, Queen Wolf. We know the chance your father gave us and the privilege you put on our shoulders. I swear, Landmont will not soon forget.
He gestured to the stairs.
Audience Hall is on the first floor. The men down there will show you the way. I need to get your heir next. We wanted to make sure the queen had the advantage.
He walked away, heading to the opposite side of the citadel, but his point was clear. This was what set Landmont apart, and they planned to make it something to be proud of. That he'd given her enough time to arrive first was just one more piece of proof, because the building was no longer asleep. Above, she could hear people's feet rushing through the halls. Below, guards were talking softly and banging something, which was probably the doors to Theodian's audience hall. When they reached the first floor, Colonel Navrosh was waiting, looking as pristine as ever.
I think it has begun, he told her.
The woman behind him laughed softly, but her eyes were on Tristan.
Nico said you were huge, but I had no idea.
Then her eyes widened.
Oh, I'm so sorry. That probably sounded rude.
It's fine, Tristan assured her.
Laylee, however, wasn't as forgiving. The woman was stunningly beautiful, and her nearly crimson hair made her stand out. She was pretty, much too pretty, and smiling at Tristan more than any woman should. Jealousy knotted Laylee's guts. It wasn't a feeling she was used to, nor one she knew how to handle well. And you are, she asked, not even trying to sound interested.
Your Majesty, Colonel Navrosh offered, gesturing to the woman. This is my wife, Aisa. I brought her, hoping she'd be able to offer another group that can fight for us. Evidently, she's rounded up all the local hunters to give us a unit of archers.
His wife? Those words made Laylee breathe a sigh of relief. Not that marriage would truly stop anyone, but with a husband who looked like the colonel, the woman would be a fool to risk losing him. That news made the friendly smile return to her lips, but the woman had noticed. Even worse, she seemed impressed by Laylee's reaction, as if it had been the right one. Which meant people were starting to notice she was a little too close to her protector, but she couldn't deal with that right now. Then we're glad to have you, she told Aisa. And archers will be a great help. Please, let's see why we're all awake in the middle of the night. The colonel gestured to the large doors that now stood open at the side of the main hall. Laylee headed for it, feeling Tristan right behind her. Connell and Timoteo would follow, but it was much too early for her to bother with games of rank and propriety. That little exchange with the colonel's wife had already proven it. Inside, the audience hall was bustling. Staff members were placing out decanters of wine and spirits. Others had fresh, clean water, or even juice. At the far end, on the dais, a bench had been placed with Theodian sitting on it, leaving the throne for her. Laylee made her way to it. The moment she sat, everyone in the room turned and bowed or curtsied. Continue, Laylee told them. It's too early to be proper. Then she leaned toward Theodian. What's going on?
Dalhurst has fallen, he whispered. I don't know much more. Ram was on the gates when he arrived and sent the man to clean up and another to wake me. I sent my best man to wake you.
He did. She lifted a brow. Theodian guessed what she was wondering.
Anything he could say would be assumed to be his own wishful thinking. That's why I sent him. He's lovers with his partner, but they're good, Laylee.
Young and inexperienced, but still good.
So nothing to worry about?
I can't promise that, but I honestly didn't think so, or I wouldn't have sent him.
Then his eyes flicked to the entrance.
Ah, Death's here.